This is Eve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show number 293 in the series. This session of the radio show shares the state delegation segment of the Franklin Mass Town Council meeting held Wednesday, June 3rd, 2020. The meeting was conducted virtually to adhere to the social distancing requirements of this pandemic period. For budget discussion purposes, this segment only includes the state delegation updates and town council questions relative to the budget. The public question section respectfully included other topics not related to the FY 2020 budget discussion. That segment will be available when the full meeting video is posted for the current demand on the Town of Franklin web. My notes for the state delegation segment are included in the show notes. The recording runs around 56 minutes, so let's listen to this segment of the Town Council meeting of June 3rd, 2020.
Okay, moving on, presentations and discussions. Tonight, we're very fortunate to have Franklin State Legislative Delegation with us. Senate President Karen Spilka, Representative Jeff Roy, and Senator Rebecca Rausch. And I would ask Madam President if you would like to lead off. I know you're here.
Yep. For the mute. There we go.
Thank you. Yeah, it doesn't always work the first time.
No problem.
Yeah. Technology, when it works, it's great. And we've all become Zoom capable and whatever. But thank you for having us all here tonight. I have to admit, I do look forward. So I miss appearing before all of you personally and directly. But we'll just have to do this, and thank you for inviting us. I do just want to start by thanking all of you in Franklin for doing such a terrific job, despite it being really, really tough times. I know that you've really been working hard, the town council, the school committee, town administrator, I know, and I want to give a shout out to the health department, the superintendent, and the police and fire departments that also, in a time of COVID-19, are going above and beyond, especially thanks to Chief Lynch and Chief McLaughlin. It's been a really tough time for all of us and something that none of us ever expected. So I know Franklin, though, overall is doing very well and will continue through your leadership and your guidance. So thank you. I do want to acknowledge and thank a Franklin resident that isn't with us tonight, but we happen to see him a lot. Rupert Dubler, he's the one that does the sign language for the governor for all of the governor's press conferences. So when you see Rupert up there on the screen, you know, we've gotten to know him. I'm proud he lives in Franklin. You know, he's a resident that is also putting himself in harm's way. He truly is an essential worker, but he's become almost as famous, I have to say, as the governor. I want to personally thank him. If it's okay, I would like to start by giving a general fiscal picture. I know all of you have been asking about what's the fiscal state of the Commonwealth. So generally, and then quickly for 2020, and then a little bit what I know about 2021. If that's okay, Mr. Chairman, I'd love to do that.
Absolutely.
It's not pretty, I think, as you can expect, but I figure better to give you the honest news than no news about this. So like at the local level, COVID-19 presents a twofold crisis for state finances. The first and foremost, it was a public health crisis that required major expenditures on healthcare, public safety, and our statewide response. And then second, because of the public health response, as you're all aware, activities that generate state revenue have basically been at a standstill for a while, yet the demand on social safety net is increasing rapidly. And I know that you are all feeling the same thoughts and feeling this same things in Franklin. And just to give you an idea quickly, between February and the end of April, our unemployment rate went from 2.8% to over 15%. That's in a matter of two and a half months. Before this, the state's unemployment rate had not exceeded 10% since 1976. So, you know, it really helps set the stage. Our sales tax revenue, especially meals and motor vehicle sales, have fallen off a cliff, as well as thousands of businesses are closed and residents have stayed at home under the stay-at-home order. So, you know, we've borrowed money. I think you all know we postponed the personal income tax from April 15th to July 15th. So we had to borrow $2.5 billion to meet our obligations. But, you know, I am really a believer that during tough times, opportunities arise. And we can't do things the way that we've been doing them for years. So I do want to highlight that the Senate, the House, and the administration are working well together. And the chairs of Senate Ways and Means, House Ways and Means, and the governor's secretary of administration and finance convened an economic summit to look at the impact of COVID-19 on our finances. Briefly, the consensus was pretty clear that we don't know how bad it's going to be, but people could agree that there would be a drop in revenue, best case scenario, $4 to $6 billion. This was in April, the middle of April, $4 to $6 billion. It's gone up the estimate closer to $5 to $7 billion over what we thought we would take in. Just to put in perspective, in 2009, during the last Great Recession, tax revenues dropped $2.5 billion. Our budget was a lot less. Currently, our budget is about $43, $44 billion. Our budget then, a statewide budget, was closer to like low to mid-30s. So in 2020, our fiscal outlook, there's an estimate that we could be close to $700 million to $1 billion below what we expected for this current fiscal year that ends the end of this month. So we have worked aggressively to try to meet the ongoing budget challenges, and we're working really closely with the administration to manage through this shortfall and to avoid any cuts, any budget cuts for 2020. So I just wanted to let you know, I mean, I've been getting some calls. Is there any chance that there might be cuts to local aid during the month of June? That is not anticipated and they're not being discussed. We're looking at alternative ways to fill the gap for this current fiscal year. So that, at least there's some good news. 2021, starting next July, this coming July, isn't as good news. Factors that make the 21 budget outlook uncertain. First, we're still not certain how this pandemic will play out. We don't know if, for example, there's going to be a second surge or not, and what might happen. As of now, the numbers are trending lower, the cases, the deaths, thankfully, and hopefully we will be on target for the reopening, second phase of the reopening, and restaurants and others could start reopening and we could start getting our economy back in gear slowly. Second, we know state revenues are going to decline precipitously, but the estimates are forever changing, as I mentioned. third, and this is really an important feature, we don't know the availability and the flexibility of funding from the federal government. We don't know yet. Unlike 2009, we cannot use the $2.7 billion that Massachusetts got in the Corona Relief Fund to make up for lost revenues or to provide the state match for Medicaid expenditures. There are a lot of criteria and strings around the federal Corona Relief Fund, and we're hoping that they loosen that up. So it's really difficult to know the budget, let alone, you know, figuring out the process. I do want to mention, for example, so we are looking at the Corona Relief Fund and trying to get more flexibility. We're also, the Senate last week sent a very strong letter to our federal delegation, particularly the Senate and the administration, asking for the contents of what the House passed, the HEROES Act. For example, the HEROES Act has $500 billion flexible dollars that would go to states. We would get a nice chunk out of that. That would help our finances and revenues. We would get, there's $250 billion for local governments like Franklin, and that would really help. If that passed, we estimate we would get close to $7 billion, which is about what we're estimating we would lose. So we would not have to cut anywhere near as deeply as we may anticipate. So just to give you an idea, in 2009 and 10, as I mentioned, we lost $2.5 billion in that time period. And unrestricted local aid during those 2 years were cut 28%. Some of you may have lived through that and remember 28%. However, Chapter 70, because we got $1 billion in federal funds, Chapter 70 we were able to level fund. So the cuts were not as deep. Thus far, for the Coronavirus Relief Fund from the federal government, we have gotten a total of $200 million for K-12 aid. So $200 million thus far versus $1 billion back 10 years ago, when the costs weren't as high. So we are really pushing to get those funds to the states. There would be specific funding for Chapter 70. And I urge Franklin to write its own letter. I'm urging every single one of my communities to write a letter to our delegation and the administration. If you want, I can have our letter sent to you as a sample. But I think it's really important that as many people and cities and towns across the Commonwealth urge our delegation to fight for these funds. I do want to also urge you to not use the governor's numbers when you're doing a budget. The numbers he put out in January, I hate to say it, and this isn't any reflection on him, but those numbers are simply not relevant anymore. You know, I wish I could say they were good. So it's early to say. We are hoping to get something out. We will be doing, you know, we're talking about a 1/12 budget for July, possibly doing month and then a short term and then longer. I am pushing for a local aid resolution. I know we haven't done that in the legislature in several years. I think it's really important our cities and towns know what their unrestricted local aid is and their Chapter 70. And I'd love feedback tonight from you. I think, you know, coming from working and being on the school committee and my town government experience, it's better to give you numbers, some numbers, and if it's low and we have more money, we can supplement it. But you guys need to, you know, figure out how much you need to put your foundation budget is for Chapter 70, setting tax rates, doing all the things that you need to do. So I'd love to know if a local aid resolution would help, but we know how important it will be. And so we will work to, and I will tell you, working hard to one, minimize reductions, two, aggressively advocate for flexible funds from the federal government, and three, you know, continue to fight and prioritize fairness, predictability, and equity. I am speaking often with Senators Warren and Markey and Congressman Neal and others in trying to get a better idea, but we will try to get information to you as soon as possible. So I'm gonna end there. We have been very active as a Senate in passing bills and helping our municipalities. There's more hopefully coming soon. I know all of you have a lot of questions and concerns. I'd like to give my colleagues, who are great partners, and give my colleagues an opportunity to also speak. So I hate to be the bearer of bad news, don't shoot the messenger, but I figure it's better to be honest and give you an idea of what's going on for you all to know. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam President. I'm not sure that we were expecting anything but pretty much what you were saying. Next, Representative Roy.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you, Senator Spilka, for a great lead-in. I'm going to have some good news. And I think she set me up to let me give you some good news tonight. And I appreciate that. But I don't want to repeat everything that the senator said about the budget outlook for 2021. But I do want you to know that local aid is one of the top priorities for every member of the House as it is for the senators. It's something that we talk about all the time, and it's something that we have a commitment to take care of our local communities. And given our vast experience between us all serving in local government, we understand what you're up against, and we want to make sure that we help you as much as we can. So we will indeed push for as much local aid as we can possibly deliver. I do also want to say it's great to see you all again. I can't believe it's been 7 years since I left the town council, and you guys haven't aged at all. You still look wonderful. Good to be here. I want to begin, first of all, by thanking you and the citizens of Franklin for a peaceful and safe event on the town common last night. I expressed earlier today that it was heartwarming to see such an outpouring of empathy and compassion in our community that was done in a peaceful manner. It was done quickly, it was done safely, and you all ought to be very proud that something like that occurred in your community and was done in a great way. Some of the good news that I want to talk about are some of the holdovers from the 2020 budget that we and some other funding that we had. I know that the SNET Trail Tunnel underneath Prospect Street, which the delegation has been pushing for a number of years, that is under construction and will be done by this summer. And that's a tremendous project, and especially given the need for folks to get outside and be active, getting that trail up and running has been something that's been a priority for us for years. And I was absolutely thrilled to see that the construction trucks are out there and that tunnel is underway. I happen to drive by on my way to my district office every day. I drive by the Franklin State Forest, and I was thrilled to see that the construction for the parking lot for the Franklin State Forest is underway. And that was $200,000 that the delegation pushed to get into the 2020 budget to get that project. And that's underway, and looks like they're going pretty quickly, and hopefully that'll be up and running soon. Happy that we were able to get $153,000 for the community to fight substance use disorder, $50,000 for the SAFE Coalition, $50,000 for the schools department's task force, and $53,000 for vaping cessation. I know that many of you are familiar and many of you were at the opening of the Contolo mass manufacturing facility. I was absolutely thrilled to work with Chairman Mercer and bring that all together. And I see that Bob Vozeller is here. He was instrumental in doing that. And Bobby DeLorco got the Teamsters on board to start delivering this. It was a great team effort. And all of you councilors who were there and supporting this, it's a great tribute to our community. What we did not know on the day of that opening event and was announced last week, the state had put aside a fund of $10.6 million to help manufacturers scale their operations to produce personal protective equipment, which is exactly what Contolo Mass Manufacturing is doing at the old Clark Cutler McDermott facility. Well, of that $10.6 million, I'm pleased to report that Contolo Mass Manufacturing was awarded a grant in the amount of $1,840,000 for facility preparation, machinery pivoting, material training, and a quality management system. That's virtually 20% of the money that was set aside by the state is coming right here to Franklin to support manufacturing in our community. We understand that they're going to try to ramp up and create 100 new jobs for our community. So that's great news. We have been conducting virtual office hours throughout the pandemic, and I was thrilled a couple of weeks ago when we got back to our senior office hours with the town officials, and that was well attended, and we'll continue doing those throughout the time. I have a tremendous staff in my office that has been dealing with a number of constituent issues, and I think it's important for me to call them out and thank them for all of their hard work. I think unemployment claims, as Senator Spilka said, we went from 2.7% up to 15% in unemployment. Our offices were overwhelmed with calls from people who were struggling to get through the system. We know how important that money is to help people pay their bills, buy food, pay rent. We worked very hard to make sure that people got the appropriate benefits that were due to them, and really worked hard. And I really want to thank my staff for being on top of that. And we worked closely with Senator Spilka's office, Senator Rausch's office. We were coordinating all of these activities throughout, and it's a great team. I do want to highlight a couple pieces of legislation because we have been very active in putting legislation out to help communities and to help businesses and to help people throughout this process. And I want to highlight two of them because the House met in session earlier today. And the first piece of legislation that we passed was to allow restaurants that have been closed to do outdoor dining. And when the state enters the next phase, which we're hoping, we're keeping our fingers crossed that it's going to be Monday. And this bill will allow local communities to grant liquor licenses for outdoor service of alcohol, which will help these restaurants. We also are augmenting the existing takeout to allow them to sell to-go cocktails, and also capping the delivery services, which is really taken from the local restaurants. So this is a great bill that's going to support our local restaurants. And I know that's something that's important to you because I've heard from many of you on just that topic. So we're hoping that that gets into play. And I understand the Senate is taking that up next week. So we're in great shape there. And What's that?
It's news to me.
Oh, well, I...
You know.
I'm not sure who told me that, but it obviously wasn't you.
Nope.
All right. Well, no pressure. The other vote, the other bill that we took up today, we didn't end up voting on it. We're going to be back in session tomorrow, beginning at noontime. So if you really want to get into the weeds on these topics, we'll be in session. But that is to provide the vote by mail option. It's going to expand early voting for the first time in the history of Massachusetts. We're actually going to have early voting for the primary under this particular piece of legislation, make absentee voting easier, and also preserve the ability for folks to vote in person on both of the election days. So that's another piece of legislation that will likely pass in the House tomorrow. And finally, I want to alert you to a special programming event, and I know it's going to be carried on Franklin TV on Monday, Monday. I don't even know what days these are. It's June 9th, whatever day of the week that is, at 6 o'clock p.m. It's confronting the challenges of COVID-19 at the Milford Regional Medical Center. Representative Murray from Milford and I co-hosting this particular program where we interview doctors, patients, nurses, survivors, EMS paramedics, and a survivor of the COVID-19 disease. About 20 people that we interviewed, and this program is going to be broadcast to really honor those folks from this pandemic. When the executive orders were issued for folks to stay at home and close non-essential businesses, the idea was to prevent them from being exposed to the virus. However, at the same time, we asked our hospital workers and our ambulance drivers and our police officers and all the frontline workers to actually stay in work and do it at risk of being exposed to the virus. So this show is an opportunity for us to honor those folks from our communities, and they're from all the surrounding communities surrounding Milford Regional Medical Center. And that show will be on June 9th at 6 p.m. And I'd urge you to tune in. So that's it in a nutshell for me. Again, thank you for everything you do. And I'm looking forward to your questions and comments after our presentation.
Thank you, Representative Roy. Next, Senator Rausch.
Hello. Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's an honor to be here and to see all of you, even if in little tiny boxes on our computer screens. We're all, of course, getting used to that by now. I will be brief. You've heard much of basically all of the very important information, including in particular the budget rundown from our Senate president. I want to just start also by commenting briefly on last night's event in the town common. I was there the entire time, and it was just incredible. Grassroots organized, grassroots led, just really, really a fantastic, phenomenal, touching, deeply moving event. The young people who spoke and the young people who were present, but particularly the young people who spoke, were very powerful. And I commend the town and made me very proud to represent you in our state Senate. It was for the 9 minutes when folks were kneeling. It was at least 1,500 people. Oh, here's my coworker, tiny coworker. 1,500 or so people, and it was silent for the entire 9 minutes. And it was a very powerful experience. So thank you to everyone who made that possible and to all the folks who spoke. I want to just echo the comments from Representative Roy. My office also has been fielding just a tremendous number of constituent concerns and calls, in particular about unemployment and helping small business owners secure help with finding loans and trying to strategize about, you know, various stages of reopening and how to be helpful there. We've also been conducting virtual office hours since the beginning of this, and we continue to do that on alternating Fridays with signups on my website. I've also held a couple of town halls, including one in particular on health equity in the era of COVID-19, featuring a number of experts from Mass General Hospital. And I was very proud to be appointed to a number of working groups, two in particular in the Senate, specifically with regard to a response on COVID-19, a couple of subgroups, one with regard to municipalities and elections, and the other with regard to public safety. And so I've been working with colleagues in the Senate and also in the House to try to do whatever we can to lift up our folks who are on the front lines of this and provide protection and support. As some of you know, I'm the Senate chair, was appointed, thank you, Madam President, to be the Senate chair of the Joint Committee on Municipalities. So I'm going to just quickly kind of run through the three bills that have been done, two of which have been enacted, and one is still in process between the House and the Senate. The first, as you know, I believe was passed what feels like forever ago, but was signed by the governor in early April. We affectionately call it Muni 1. It allowed some town meeting delays, which are not relevant for Franklin, but also in particular provided some budget relief and in particular flexibility to enact, you know, to operate on a month-to-month basis and sort of free up some free cash and in particular allow for some deficit spending that can be amortized over the next three fiscal years. We also allowed for tolling of various different deadlines, including permits, and extended a local option to extend property taxes and a slew of any flexibility that we could provide to the towns and cities in the Commonwealth, specifically around budgeting in this incredibly difficult time and certainly fiscally challenging time. There's also a provision in there to ensure that folks still have access to municipally provided utilities, which is, of course, quite important. We want everyone to have trash and water and sewer, especially during a pandemic. So that was in there as well. And that bill also provided the ability for restaurants to sell beer and wine by takeout. So that was Muni 1. Muni 2 focused really on education. That is the bill that waived the MCAS requirement for this year and allowed modifications for graduating seniors, competency determination requirements also under the MCAS structure. Similar budget flexibility for school districts with DESE approval, similar to the flexibility provided for cities and towns and a couple of other provisions as well. And then Muni 3 is the one that's not yet enacted, but the Senate has Senate passed it about a month ago. And then we just received it back from the House. We sent back another version earlier this week. So that bill is now with the House, but allows some additional flexibility for municipal finances, including a local option to make expenditures from stabilization funds with a two-thirds approval. And that, you know, we want to, again, we know that this fiscal moment is incredibly difficult. So we're trying to provide that kind of flexibility. And with that, I want to just say thank you and offer to anyone, if you would like to email me offline, please do that or give us a call. We are checking the voicemail in my office regularly. And again, proud to represent you in the Senate and look forward to your questions.
Thank you, Senator Rausch, and thank you all for your short presentations. And I will, just so that everybody understands the process, I will go first to the council, and then after the council is done, if there's any citizen that would like to ask a question or make a comment, I will allow it. And I know he's been sitting on his hands for the last 10 minutes waiting to jump in here. Our town administrator, Jamie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. While I was sitting on my hands waiting, and then Representative Roy, said a couple of things that made me sit back in the chair a little bit more than I would have. I just want to say, on behalf of the town, I appreciate all of your leadership during this difficult time. I'd be remiss to say a couple of things regarding our priorities that all of you know. I'm gonna say. Representative Roy just touched on it. It's great to hear that every member of the House of Representatives, and I assume the Senate as well, their top priority this year is local aid. There's been a lot of discussion, obviously, among myself and many of our colleagues and superintendents and town managers. We obviously feel very strongly, and a letter will be coming your way as well. I've already texted Pooja of Senator Skoka's staff to get the letter to the federal delegation. We will do everything we can to advocate on behalf of the town for local aid. Our deep feeling here is in Franklin that cuts to local aid, while we know this year is tough and we know that there's going to be some, is essentially cutting off the lifeline to all of us on the local level who are on the front lines of this pandemic and who's going to be able to ensure the public safety to get our economy back going. Just as context, and when I say front lines, we all talk about public safety for certain, and rightfully so. But I also want to send a shout out that those local aid cuts have a significant impact, obviously, on our teachers and on our schools who are having a tremendously difficult time, but an honorable time and effort in trying to educate our kids with a very uncertain future in front of them. In addition, our water, sewer, DPW workers, our custodians are in our buildings disinfecting all of the public facilities. They're disinfecting our public safety vehicles. Our Board of Health is obviously working overtime, just like every community. As context, this year, I mentioned this to Senator Skoka at the Clark Cutler event. In our budget proposal for FY21, I've already begun the reductions. Our tax levy will be at the lowest amount of new growth since 2009. We're making that assumption at this point. In addition, we're cutting local receipts, or estimating those at least a 15% reduction. We do see some of our receipts, like ambulance receipts. We expect those to stay strong. But obviously, meals tax, hotel tax, excise tax, just like everybody else. We're already downplaying our revenues at least a couple million. Going into FY21, we will revise our budget in September and October after the legislature has completed its action. But to give context here, a 20% local aid cut for the town of Franklin's well over $6.5 million, in addition to the $2 million that we are already reducing. At some point, it's unquestionably going to cut into the service level on the front lines of our staff that are out there right now working tirelessly to make sure that our community is safe. Which gets to a quick final point about reopening. It's great to see some action on this stuff. As I've said on this meeting at Town Council or FinCom and some other meetings before, our staff, Anne-Marie Tracy, has been doing a lot of data analysis of the facts. And the town of Franklin consistently for the last month has had the second lowest infectious rate of any community over 30,000 people in the Commonwealth. We've actually done very, very well here. And I think that this is a good sign moving forward in June. We're enthused by the legislation on the restaurants. I know I've communicated with many of your staff, as well as you, Representative Roy, on these things. And I think that this phase is really important and critical into hopefully restoring some of those revenues as we enter the new fiscal year, particularly today, the announcement on recreation camps. Ryan Jetty and myself have never been so happy in the last couple months to see some progress there, where we can hopefully draw in some additional camps and revenues that way. So obviously, it goes without saying, I appreciate all of your advocacy. We will be sending a letter off to advocate very strongly for local aid to make sure there's as few as cuts as possible. And I appreciate the opportunity to speak tonight. And obviously, I'm happy to answer any questions from the public as well tonight. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Jamie. I'll go to the town councilors now, and the first one that had his hand up was Councilor Bisanti.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I want to thank all our esteemed officials for attending the meeting, coming to Franklin. You're all doing a great job, and we're lucky to have you. I want to thank everybody for their hard work. Jamie, I watched the Finance Committee, and you did a great, you and Buddha did an excellent, articulate job of defining the stormwater management. I just wanted to say, I do have a question for Madam Senate, Rebecca Roush, if I could field that question, Mr. Chair.
Absolutely. Just through the chair, please.
Through the chair, Madam Senate, Rebecca Roush. I've been on the council, this will be my fourth term. This last term, I've focused my energies, or some of my energies, with the homeless, and I've done a little homework, and I've seen that you have some background in working with the homeless, and I know how frustrating it can be, and just in my short tenure now, working and trying to get objectives reached, you know, the COVID kind of sidelined us a little bit, just as we were getting ready to put committees together and raise funds. But I did a little homework, and I noticed that you were the, you introduced the bill for the transportation of children of the homeless. And I was elated to see that. But then also I saw that when it came up for amendment with your colleagues, that you were a no vote on that. And I just wanted to know what could have possibly happened. Again, I know how frustrating and how that's a moving target with homeless issues, but I just questioned why you became a no vote on the bus, on the transportation for homeless children.
I'm sorry, I'm not quite sure which vote you're talking about. My bill is
That was Senate Bill 344.
Senate Bill 344. So I'll have to look that up. The two bills that I filed with regard to homelessness, one of them, and I've partnered with colleagues in the House on both of these bills, one of them has been filed for several sessions by Representative Smitty Pignatelli as the Homeless Bill of Rights. And I was very proud to partner with him in the Senate this session. So that bill was this session filed in the House and also in the Senate. There's also a new bill that that I worked on with Representative Liz Miranda in the House called the Act of Living. And those two bills were actually combined in the committee process, and they were just reported out favorably very recently. And in fact, I'm not sure that they have since been assigned to another committee, the next committee in the process. That's the first time ever that the Homeless Bill of Rights has been reported out of committee with a favorable report. As I understand it. So I'm very proud to partner with that work. I thank you for your efforts to support and advance the rights of people experiencing homelessness. It is, in fact, a deeply critical time for us to help folks, especially as droves of people are now worried about housing security because of the economic turmoil that we're in right now. The combined bill is kind of still moving its way through, but I will look into the bill you referenced, Senate 344, did you say?
Yes, Senate Bill 344, and evidently it came up in a roll call vote, and you were a no vote on that.
I'm going to try to look that up right now. I don't recall that.
But I do appreciate your efforts with the homeless, and most of my efforts in the beginning of my tenure this term was basically bringing awareness to the town of Franklin about the homeless in your own hometown. So people really were shocked to find out that there are homeless people in relatively affluent neighborhoods and affluent towns. So that's part of the problem. But the other problem is housing. You know, we just don't have enough of it. But thank you for your response, Senator. I appreciate you coming to Franklin. And Thank you very much, and I release the floor to the chair.
Thank you, Councillor Bisanti. Next councillor, Councillor Chandler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through you, I just want to thank all three of you for coming tonight. I think it means a lot to the residents, and it's really great that you're right in their living room and you can they can really feel what you're saying. This is my first budget, and I can say I'm not going to have any fun with it. So I will really be rooting for that Heroes Act because it could
just
make
know
everything.
That it can't get any worse than this.
Thank you, Jeff. I needed the pat on the back there.
Never say never.
Thank you.
And on wood.
Yeah, for sure.
Thank you, Karen. And last, I just had a quick question. I know if things do get bad, there could be some layoffs. And I know in the past, the state, say there was 10 teachers that were 58 years old, and they just needed 2 more years to reach 60 to retire. And the state would add 2 years to the retirement so that they could just retire and there would be 10 less layoffs. Is that something that could happen now to help people out to retire and not have to lay people off?
Who would you like that directed to?
I don't know. I didn't explain it all that well, but any of them.
Madam President?
Thank you.
I'll take it. It's a very good question, actually, and sometimes it's an early retirement bill is offered so that people aren't laid off, but they can retire. We have not had any discussion about that yet. It certainly would be something that, you know, would be raised in the coming months, potentially, if there was a desire, but they can be expensive up front because you have to lay out the money and then, you know, up front, and then you have the much higher pension costs that can, you know, hang into that. So it works for some communities, not all, but if that's something, and I was going to mention, if there are other areas that you believe we in the legislature could help Franklin, please let us know, filter it, you know, clearly, probably through Jamie. But if there are other ideas, as mentioned, we've done 3 municipal bills, but, you know, there's no reason why we couldn't do a 4th if there are things that you feel would help your finances, the strength of your community, or any other areas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to finish. Appreciate all three of you. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Chandler. Councillor DeLocco.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you all for coming today. I appreciate that. I know it's going to be really hard for you guys as well as us, but I would like to say that we have to stay together and work together because it's going to take a village to get through this. You know, what scares me more than anything is the second wave. But even if we open up phase 2, phase 3, whatever it is, I still think people are going to be scared to go out or, you know, get active. So I think it's going to be a long recovery. I hope it's not as long as, you know, as expected, but you know, I'm scared for layoffs. I'm scared for actually the opiate issue. If we do have to make cuts, is we could be falling back into a bad issue with opiates. And I know that's really personal to all of you people. And I don't know how we're going to come out of it. But I do want to thank you guys for everything you do. And you know, just please, any help you can get us, please get us, and we'll very, very well accept it. But in all your bills that you're passing, I really appreciate that with the municipal bills and everything you're doing. But and especially Jeff for sponsoring the early voting bill today. We've all got a lot of calls from seniors that are going to be very afraid to go vote. and they want to vote. So I do appreciate that and all your hard work on that. And just keep it going. You guys are doing a great job. And anything we can help you with, please let us know. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilor DeLarco. Councilor Hamblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, I would like to thank all of you for being here. Senator Spilka and Roush and Representative Roy. It really means a lot to people to know that we're all continuing to try to run the government and to do what the best that we can for everyone. I'm sure that you realize that during this pandemic, one of the major things that people are scared about is food sourcing. And I think people would be sort of amazed to know that Massachusetts does not have a USDA chicken processing plant. So all of our local farmers have to either go to Rhode Island or to Vermont to have their animals processed to be able to sell them. And, you know, as we push for smaller processing plants, more local food, this is one thing I think that is very important for the community, for the state, and for all of the small farmers in the state. So I was wondering if Senator Spilka could talk about maybe, I know that Senator Bruce Tarr is supportive of financing infrastructure for a chicken processing plant. And there's a lot of issues involved with making it easier to set one up, because I think the Department of Agriculture would be a better place for that to happen. But I was wondering if you would be willing to maybe spearhead something like that. Go ahead.
Madam President.
Okay. Yeah, I certainly, I mean, we can take this offline and follow up and talk more about it. And I would pull in some of my district folks, Pooja Mehta and Dennis Giambetti possibly, to talk about this and what would be involved. And so I would certainly, you know, do that. So why don't we follow up and talk further about it? Thank you, though, for raising it.
And I have a couple other things, Mr. Chairman, if that's okay.
You still have the floor, Councilor Hamlin.
Thank you. So along with the chicken processing for our local farmers, it's also that there's a lot of farmers that rely on the pick-your-own season, that they don't have an infrastructure, they don't for a chiller, for a cold storage. And I think it would be really important to start to figure out a way for them to do their business. And it's another thing to add on maybe to the list of things that we need to do to make sure our businesses and our local small farmers can survive. And so I would like to add that on there. And I have one more thing, Mr. Chairman, if that's okay with you.
That's okay.
So during this pandemic, one of the things that to keep my, as a small business owner, to keep my staff mentally healthy, we have had to say that we will not take cash. And Massachusetts is one of the states that makes it mandatory, but there's no enforcement policies there. So I was wondering if we could come up with a way to maybe make it so that possible for businesses to actually say it's okay for us not to take cash, because my staff has nightmares about handling 200 people's cash a day. And we have been really treated poorly by our customers because we won't accept their cash to keep our staff mentally healthy. And so Massachusetts is the only state that has that on the books. And I was wondering if we could maybe have another discussion about that offline, maybe, I guess.
Yeah. That for sure. I think that you know, is something that should be addressed. I agree with you. And the pick your own, I have to tell you, and I'm surprised I didn't think of it because I love to do pick your own in the spring and summer. I actually have leadership with the governor tomorrow, so I will raise that with them to try to put it on their radar for their reopening schedule as well.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Councillor Hamblin. Councillor Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Karen, Jeff, Rebecca, thank you for coming out today and giving this presentation. It was very difficult, obviously, for you guys, and very difficult for us to hear this news. But I do know for certain that working together, we're all going to get through this. It's going to be hard. We're going to have to make some adjustments, but you know, I know we can do this. I know we can accomplish this. So it's been a tough time. It's been a tough time for a lot of people. I've been unemployed since April. But still fortunate to be able to keep my head above the water, like many people are doing right now. So, you know, it's our job to work hard, to try to get things back open as quickly as possible so that people can start getting food on their plates and getting these businesses back open. But I just wanted to thank you for taking your time out today and giving us the news and look forward to working with you guys on making things move forward.
Thank you, Councillor Jones. I do not see... Councillor Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to thank the legislators for coming out and speaking to us tonight. I know it's a tough legislative season, and the town council, as chairman has said, stands right by you to face those tough decisions and try to work through these challenging times. So thank you very much for coming out tonight.
Thank you, Councillor Kelly.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio, WFPR-FM. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. You can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.